Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Steve Buckley, your host of Government. Open Government Radio. Yes, it's been a few months since I've had the last show on Open Government Radio. I've been trying to figure out a better way to use the program rather than on a strictly weekly basis. And the reason I wanted to have a show today was because of the rally to restore sanity and or fear that was on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. today. It was from 12 to 3 Eastern Time. And this is interesting to people, I believe. I think it's interesting to people, particularly for those who have been trying to improve the level of public engagement in our country's affairs, and that includes, government affairs, which is our government, and so therefore our affairs. I don't know what the numbers were for the attendance at this rally, which was put on by John Stewart of The Daily Show and Stephen Colbert of The Colbert Report, which are two programs that appear late night on Comedy Central. And if you don't know what those are, then I would suggest you go to thedailyshow.com. And but this is primarily for the people who know about the rally today. I want to hear what they think about the rally, whether it will do or could do or might do something in the way of increasing or raising people's consciousness about the idea of some central or middle road that we can take that will allow for more civil and sane discussion and not be so polarized in the way we look at problems and problem solving. So I did put an article, I put this out on Twitter to see if anybody wanted to call in. This is kind of a last-minute thing because I wasn't really that prepared and I was caught up in another project, so I apologize for putting the links so late on my blog. And the best way to follow what I'm going to talk about now is to actually go to the blog for the links there. And that would be at ustransparency.com. Transparency is all one word, .com, and then you can see that under the posting for Friday, yesterday I posted something late Friday on the show today, which was Open Government Radio 10/30/10. # Rally for Sanity Aftermath, what do you think? And there's a link there to an article that appeared in my local paper, and I found out it appeared on the National Newswire Service, so it must have been in several papers, and there's a link there, but it talked about the larger significance of, larger possible significance of the of today's rally and what it may or may not do. And of course there'll be other pundits besides myself who will be trying to make sense of whether this will do anything one way or another as far as our politics go. But in any event, that website again is ustransparency.com. The posting for Friday, October 29th, which points to today's show. And there's a link if you scroll down right under where it says note. This is just a placeholder blog post right under that, you'll see, in the meantime, take a look at, and then there's a link, this National Newswire article. And that's what I thought I might as well read this off. I don't see any callers right now, so I'm basically killing some time until some callers call in. If you are listening to this, the call-in number is, and it's there also at ustransparency.com. You scroll down. The call-in live number is 917-388-4210. And that number again, the call-in number for Open Government Radio today and any day that it's on, is 917-388-4210. And I would like to know if you watched the rally to restore sanity today on the National Mall, and hear your thoughts about whether, how you think it went, as far as a form of political entertainment or entertaining politics, or however you describe it. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on what you thought about it. And the number again is 917-388-4210. And that's on Open Government Radio. So, and we have a caller. Let's see here. And we are going to unmute. Hello, this is Open Government Radio. I'm Steve Buckley, calling from area code 203. Are you there?
Yeah, this is Ben Roberts, Steve. How are you doing?
Oh, hello, Ben. Fine. How are you? Did you watch the rally?
Well, I did wind up watching a good portion of it, actually. I had a large batch of chili to make for a party tomorrow, and it was a good thing to accompany that process. So.
Oh, okay. Fine. Then, and in case this is all being recorded for posterity, so whether anybody's listening to us or not, you want to... We know each other. Certainly, people can go to my blog and read about me for Steve Buckley, but you want to give a little background on perspective on why people should care what you think about public engagement and how to make it improve the quality and quantity of it?
Well,
your experience? Besides
sure.
Besides being a good chili maker?
Right. Well, you don't know that for sure, do you? But
okay, well, a busy chili maker.
That indeed. I'm involved in trying to promote public engagement and public discourse and dialogue and deliberation in general. I've been connected with the Coffee Party movement, which arose as a response to the Tea Party and kind of an un-Tea Party concept, standing for civil discourse primarily, and transpartisanship is how it's evolved, although it's a very diverse movement, so it's got lots of different strains in it, but that's really the predominant focus. And I want to give a shout out to a bunch of my Coffee Party compatriots who were at the rally today, including the founder of the movement, Annabelle Park, and Sabina Virgo, and Ray Hudkins, and a bunch of other folks that were there. So I've been following this whole question of how we bring civil discourse into our politics and how important that is, and what can be achieved by focusing on that. And you know, that pretty much dovetails with, I think, the whole theme of the Rally for Sanity. So does that make me somebody that anybody ought to listen to? I don't know, but I've certainly been thinking about
it. Well, it probably makes you more thoughtful than 99% of the people who went to the rally, which is not, I'm not taking them down, I'm just saying that a lot of people are probably intrigued with the idea of that there are other people like themselves who are looking for a more neutral and civil and way than the way things are now, where everybody wants to pull you off to the left or to the right and choose sides.
Well, you know, I think there's two interesting questions kind of embedded in what you're saying. The first is, you know, who were the people that were there, and why were they there? You know, was this, when you watched it, it seemed as much like entertainment as it did, you know, a serious endeavor until perhaps the very end, although there was certainly an ironic message being presented throughout. And then I think the other interesting question is whether, you know, civil discourse and civility implies being a moderate, you know, can there's been some interpretation that this is about, you know, moderation and eschewing quote unquote extreme positions, and for me personally I don't go that way. I don't even like the whole idea that we have this you know, single one-dimensional spectrum. You know, you're either on the left or the right or somewhere in the middle. I think that's really hurting our discourse overall. So to me, civil discourse is about a process and about learning to listen to one another and you know, think together constructively about the opportunities we can create, as opposed to you know, compromising in what might be termed the mushy middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I was it was interesting. I was watching it on C-SPAN to see what kind of. I mean, I could have watched it on Comedy Central channel on you know, on the cable TV. But I said, oh, I want to see how this comes across, on how it's presented by C-SPAN, and you know, which would be a more dry approach, or you know, how they framed it in that way, because it's typically not the type of show or program that they have on C-SPAN. You know, usually C-SPAN's pretty dry.
Yeah.
So this was definitely different, and it was interesting to listen to the comments. They had callers call in afterwards, and I had forgotten, I hadn't watched C-SPAN in a long time, but I had forgotten that they did, and I don't know if you watch C-SPAN at all, but sometimes they'll have a show, and then they'll ask for people to call in after, whatever, or a program rather,
right?
And it'll be on a particular issue, you know, health reform or whatever, something like that. And maybe they'll have some, you know, forum or somebody's putting on something. So they cover it, and they said, you know, then they ask for people to call and say, so what do you think about, you know, what you just watched on TV and so forth. But I had forgotten that down at the bottom of the screen, they have three phone numbers that you can call in. And one of them is the Republican call-in line.
Right.
Another one is the Democratic call-in line. And the third is independent call-in line. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, so it was the whole idea that you couldn't just call in. I've forgotten. It's probably been years since I've seen that. But I'm like, oh, right. They're still into that frame of mind where, you know, where you have to call in on this line if you're a Democrat or you know, or
right.
A Republican, or you know, left-handed or purple hair, you know, it's like, because we know all about those purple hair people. You know, it's like, and so immediately anything you say is put in the context of, now this is a person calling in and they say that. And now we'll go to the Republican line, you know, so immediately you're portrayed as one of those people, or, you know, the Democrat, or one of these people,
right.
Or one of those people who doesn't know what they are. Something like that's the inference.
Yes,
and
exactly.
So the whole thing about was being, you know, transpartisan or, you know, nonpartisan or whatever, and then they go, okay, you partisan people out there, what do you think about this nonpartisan stuff? And please say it in a partisan way.
Yeah.
So it was like,
yeah. I mean, I imagine, you know, they're trying to get balance, you know, but that's kind of, I think, part of the trap you get in when you're stuck on that scale is the only way to define, you know, categorize opinions, or you think you have to define and categorize opinions. Of course, it's a problem with the political system itself that we have a duopoly. We're stuck with these two parties.
Yeah.
You can't really, I mean, it's interesting what's happening with the Tea Party, which isn't really a third party, but is kind of, you know, with its libertarian roots, it's shaken up the Republicans. And it seems like in some cases that's causing them to lose seats. In other cases, maybe they'll win, but it's arguable whether that, you know, that was because of the Tea Party influence. But in general, the idea of, you know, third party movements tend to get squashed because of the winner take all election system we have. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I would have liked to have seen Stewart address some basic issues of good governance. You know, the corrupting influence of money in politics. I mean, we have arguably legalized bribery in our election system now, and the amount of money that's being spent, and you see it fueling these you know, vitriolic ads that Stewart was in part responding to, and that everybody seems to hate. You know, there are proposals, there are lots of ideas out there for how we create a vital and living democracy, as Francis Moore LePay would say, instead of this thin democracy we have now where, you know, large special interest money kind of controls the agenda, all we do is vote, and then we turn everything over to some mythical free market to actually, you know, solve our problems, because we don't think as people we can really be engaged on an ongoing basis in what happens in our society. We don't trust the fundamental goodness and decency of one another. You know, we're all and I think that what Stewart was doing was really, you know, making that the counter argument very effectively in the end. But I would have liked to have seen him take it one step further and say, you know, so if you'd like our government to run the way all those cars are running as they go into the Lincoln Tunnel, this great metaphor he used at the very end of the show,
yes, yeah.
There are things we can do, like, you know, open government, like getting citizen engagement in the government process, and, you know, participatory budgeting and you know, real town halls, not shout fests, not, you know, panels where people just line up at a microphone and ask questions even, but where no actual dialogue happens, where, you know, nothing insightful emerges. People have incredible ability to solve problems when they come together to do it, and not just to solve problems, but even better, to create opportunities. And so he had the essence of that message there. But he didn't say, oh, by the way, there's more you can do than just change the TV channel and turn off Glenn Beck or Keith Olbermann. So I was a little frustrated by that, you know.
Well, I was actually surprised at the end. I mean, for people who only caught part or some part of it, that there was a lot. There were there was entertainment. I would say it was probably 75% entertainment.
Yeah.
But with the 25% interspersed, you know, sneaky little ways that, you know, which is what they try to do with, you know, what satire is, you know, sneak something in there. So then people go, oh, that was funny. Wait a minute. My brain is working. They're making a point here. What is it? So like putting the medicine in with the candy or something like that. I guess maybe that's the, with the vitamins in with the candy. But I was surprised at the end that he got serious. I thought it was just going to be, you know, that type, more of the same up until the end, and then have some big wrap up number or something. You know, all that would be all entertainment. And I was, because he's been telling people that it was apolitical, and you know, so you have to be very careful when you say you're apolitical. Then that's, you know, you almost have to be a neuter.
That's kind of the opposite of what we really need, you know. We have too much of that. And that's in democracy, where you just, you know, at best you vote and then you go off into your little bubble and you watch reality TV shows, and that's, you know, the extent of your engagement. Yeah.
Right. So I was surprised that he actually got serious at the end. I'm going, wow. He is actually, you know, and then I was wondering what he was going to, you know, is he going to say, you know, so what you want to do is, you know, other than drive courteously across the Lincoln Tunnel or whatever tunnel that was, what tunnel he was pointing to, but they showed video of cars slowly creeping and letting each other in and, you know, going from eight lanes down into one or two lanes and so forth. So I'm like waiting for something like, and so what you want to do is, and I was expecting him to say, go out and vote. But he didn't even say that.
He didn't even say that.
The efforts was just go, just be nice, which, you know, yeah, certainly be nice, but it would have been good if I would have had to druthers. He could still have been apolitical and said, you know, there are groups out there, you know, it's just don't watch my show, you know, which is, you know, I want you to watch my show, but also if you want to do something more, then get together, then you can get together with people who have been working in this area for a long time. And without pointing to any group in particular, you know, just go out there on the web and, you know, find them. Just the idea of letting people know that there are groups, there are people that have been working. And so, you know, it's not like, you know, well, that was a funny show, oh well, and then go back to, you know, and just be a better driver.
Yeah, I was trying to think, you know, if he was to refer to a group, who would have, you know, who would have made the cut? Who would have been okay for him to...
Yeah, it would have been hard to pick one.
America Speaks is the one that kind of came to the top of my mind.
Was what?
America Speaks.
Yeah, the thing is, once you start, it's kind of like when you get the Academy Award and you want to start thanking people. It's like you have to rattle off everybody or you're going to piss off somebody. Why didn't you say my name? So
yeah, and you'll get arguments about, you know, whether one organization or another is really doing what mm-hmm. what he says. I mean,
well, he could have said Google civil discussion and or something. Yeah.
He could have told people to start. You know what? I mean, look at the Tea Party, right? It started because Rick Santelli, you know, a fairly right-wing guy on CNBC was ranting on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange about, you know, how unfair it was that we were giving help to these people who couldn't pay their mortgages. And that started a movement, and just, you know, people started forming Tea Parties. Stewart could have told people to start forming, you know, civil discourse groups. You know, say bring your community together to discuss the important stuff that we need to deal with, and you know, in a civil and neighborly way, and see if we can't get out of the shout fest. I think that would have been brilliant. You know,
mm-hmm.
And Rick Santelli doesn't run anything. You know, he just made a comment, and he sparked this thing because there was a hunger for it. I think there's a real hunger for civil discourse in this country too. The Coffee Party movement certainly tapped into it.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
I think that would have been awesome if he had done that.
Yeah, I mean, especially since, I mean, the Coffee Party, which for people who don't know, is coffeepartyusa.com.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
For people who are listening, coffeepartyusa.com started back in February when Annabelle Park posted something on her Facebook page, and it just seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people. But it was about the idea that there really is a need for civil discourse.
Civil discourse and to get our government working again, you know. Were kind of the two key themes. The sense that government is broken, and what it's really over the months evolved into is a real focus on the mechanisms of democracy itself and how broken they've become. But this basic idea that you should gather together in coffee houses and talk with people as well as online, which is where I've been a bit more focused. And you know, I wouldn't have expected him to single out the Coffee Party movement, but I think it would have been cool if he'd simply, you know, brought that idea forward.
Okay. Well, we've been talking with Ben Bose. Ben, I don't know how much time you had. I actually have another caller here. So do you have to run off and do something? Or are you hanging around for a little while and listen to this other caller? Or
I can hang around for a little bit, you know, maybe another 5 or 10 minutes, if you think that would be useful.
Okay.
You want to have a couple of us on, but I'm also happy to make way for another voice. I appreciate you having me on, and glad that you're doing this, Stephen.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. And this, again, this is Steve Buckley on Open Government Radio, where the blog that I post the links to is on ustransparency.com, and I think I mentioned to Ben that there's one article there that does seem to capture, if you go to ustransparency.com, there's an article there that was on the National Newswire service, and it really touches on what Ben and I have been talking about here. So it really, and Open Government Radio is about the White House's effort to increase the quality and quantity of public engagement with their government. So anyway, let's find out who our other caller is here. And for other people who want to call in, the phone number again is 917-388-4210. That's Open Government Radio call-in line, 917-388-4210. We'd like to hear what you think about the rally to restore sanity and or fear that was on the National Mall today in Washington, D.C. So here we go. And I have a caller from area code 949. Are you there? Hold a second. My computer is slowly. There we go. Okay.
Hello.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
314-919? Yes.
Yes.
Hi,
this
is
Steve
Buckley.
Hello, Steve. I'm out here in California, Southern California, and you know, I didn't see the rally this morning. I was busy this morning, and though I've been reading a lot about it, and you know, I wanted to kind of reflect on something that you and your calling guests were talking about, and that is the political conversation. I go to a lot of tea parties out here in California. California is pretty much a one-party state. Democrats run California. But the Tea Party rallies that are out here are big, and they're passionate, and they're civil. I've never seen any problems at Tea Party rallies. And I think sometimes when I hear conversations like yours and like your coffee party friend about civility and such, I think it's important to remember that politics is passionate. There's going to be passionate people involved, and the issues are consequential, and people get riled up over those things. But that's a good thing. It's a positive thing. We need more people involved in the system. And when you're talking about politics and religion and this, you're going to have passion. You're going to have that. It can't be a kind of this somber, somnambulant conversation between people, highbrow conversation between people. Sometimes it's a loud and exciting conversation, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing to have. We ought to have more of that. And when I go to these tea parties, we just had one out here in Orange County 3 or 4 weeks ago, you meet people from all over the spectrum, and people label themselves. People call themselves Republicans or Democrats or Independents, and they have an idea of what they think that they are, and you get all kinds of views. And the Tea Party has many different views within it, many different perspectives. You have libertarians who are primarily there because of fiscal issues, and they're usually more socially liberal. You have Republicans who are a dwindling minority out here, but still they are usually socially conservative and fiscally conservative. And then you have Democrats who can be either way too as well. They can be socially conservative but more fiscally liberal. They like their government to be involved in what's going on in their communities and have influence in the schools and stuff like that. At these rallies, and I invite you guys to go to some of them instead of kind of talking about them, go to them. You meet people from all over the place who have all kinds of different views. And nobody's throwing punches or rolling around on the ground. It's a very civil conversation. And it's just been such a very long time since I can remember, I'm 42, having so many people involved in the political conversation right now. It's a good thing. The Tea Party, it's a good thing. Coffee Party, I wish they would have kept that going. I wish that they would have created some kind of momentum and brought them together. It's a good thing, the conversation we're having right now.
Yeah, I like coffee and I like tea. So I mean,
right on.
Well, the coffee party is still going, by the way, and we, in fact, at our national convention in Louisville, we're hoping to have the leader of the Tea Party Express join us for a transpartisan conversation. Unfortunately, I guess she got ill on the way there, but you know, we haven't managed to make the impact that the Tea Party has. That's for sure. But I'd also, you know, I totally agree with you that passion is very important in politics, and you know, these are passionate issues. So I don't think civility implies being bland or boring or never really getting excited about what you do. But I think there are, you know, there have been examples, and you know, maybe it's unfair to sort of tarnish the Tea Party with the actions of a few people that might have associated themselves with it. But I think there is, you know, what if you look at what John Stewart was highlighting as his examples of uncivil discourse. It's you know, saying that the president is a communist or a Muslim or, you know, just ridiculous off the wall, you know, kind of inflammatory assertions, as opposed to having a real conversation about, you know, what we can come together and do as a country if we really work together. And I've found, you know, plenty of people from well, I don't know about plenty, but because I haven't talked to that many, but certainly I know there are a number of people in the Tea Party, many who favor a lot of the things that people on the left would, in terms of particularly this issue I was talking about before, about the corrupting influence of money in politics and this sort of corporate government conglomeration that we now have with big government and big corporations all kind of, you know, working the same game together. I think we could probably unite on that, even if we disagree on many other things.
Certainly, certainly. You could bring both of these groups together, and I'm sure there'd be a whole lot we could all agree on. You and I may differ on maybe major political issues, but everybody wants a more wants a government that's more transparent, you know. And you know, you want less money in politics, then give the government less power. Power and money go hand in hand. About it. That's why many in the Tea Party want a smaller government. They want more localized control. About that. That's one of the answers that we have for that conundrum. But, yeah, I mean, you have the unions right now in total spending $1 billion on this upcoming election. Big stakes when there's so much power to be had by our federal government, which is increasingly growing, increasingly having an effect on our individual lives. If the government's going to grow and insert itself in there, then everybody's going to want to have a say. And that's what you have going on right now. That's why so many Tea Partiers are so concerned. That's why people are getting up off the couch, getting out into the street. And you have to admit that on the right, or the conservative side, or the center right, we're not the types to go out on the street corner and hold signs. That's not our thing. Ordinarily, we're kind of a quiet side of the spectrum here, and it's usually more of a center left and go to the left where you have people that are protesters. They get out. They emote. They make their feelings known. They engage people on these issues. Certainly they do. And so when you see something like this happening, I'm telling you, it's historical. It's something that I don't know how often we're going to see something like this, this kind of organic, rising of, you know, a lot of average people who are not necessarily involved in politics, who are all of a sudden up and out and walking around. That's one of the things that has moved me so much about these Tea Partiers. I mean, I'm very much into politics. I love it. It's a grand soap opera to me. But you go to these Tea Parties and you're meeting people who are never involved in politics before. They don't follow things, but now
I think
they are.
That's a key thing, I think, is that people, and I had read that before when the Tea Party started, you know, getting into the news and so forth. And they would say, you know, little old ladies or people, they said, I've never been to a political rally before. And for people, you know, I mean, who are like, you know, 60 or 70, who've never been to, it's like, well, this is, they've been waiting for the right time. And these, certainly they had plenty of choices, you know, a lot of wing nuts or causes out there. And for somebody's grandmother to finally go to a political who's, you know, seems like a perfectly nice person, you know, not doesn't fit the stereotype of crazy person that they go to that. But that to me is a sign that there's a groundswell. You're tapping into people who don't jump up on tables and scream. These are the quiet people who are finally reaching the point where they say, no, I need to do something. I need to do something. It's getting to that point. But let me ask you guys one thing. I know Shane said you didn't watch it, and it's probably going to be repeated on Comedy Central or on the web somewhere and so forth. Very entertaining television. And but there was one thing that struck me when the callers called in at the end of the show was that whether they called in on the Democratic line or the Republican line or the Independent line, that the host was, you know, a lot of times they'd call in and start going off on a tangent about, they'd start getting political, but then the host would say, "So, well, what did you think about the rally today? Did you watch it? What did you think of that?" And even if they were, you know, even if they were really to the left or really to the right or anything, everybody said it seemed to be a common theme that the reaction was, "Oh, I like that. Oh, that was really good. Oh, yeah. Oh, I liked seeing the young people. Oh, that was so, you know." And so everybody, it was good to hear that no matter what stripe people said, they all thought this was a good thing. And I'm wondering if, you know, we can't bottle this or can it or do something, but whether or not this idea that, well, certainly a lot of people were engaged in this, but is there some way that perhaps you take a little of this and add it to, it can spice up, like, and I don't want to say, you know, a boring radio show like mine, which is about, you know, open government and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of times we're talking about federal agencies and what they're doing with their implementation plan to engage, you know, blah, blah, easy to fall asleep. So I'm wondering, I wonder if there can be like a hybrid program that would be a little more political, a little more activist than, you know, John Stewart saying, well, you know, I don't want to point to any website, but maybe there could be a John Stewart-ish type of clone show that was a little bit more on the activist side, not activist left or right, but just, you know, promoting the idea of civil discussion or transparency or something, you know, the idea of getting people involved, finding out what's going on and making their own decisions and talking with other people in a civil way, but with a healthy dollop of humor or satire or whatever. Do you think something like that could come of this? Or, you know, maybe that would be the right recipe for taking advantage of this phenomena that John Stewart has evidently tapped into. Guys?
You want me to? Ben, you want to start at that?
Jump in with.
Yeah.
Shane or Ben? Go ahead.
I think Stewart is, you know, is somewhat unique. You could argue, I don't know. I'm not sure I quite that I think that what you're describing. Well, let me put it this way. I don't think we need humor. I don't think we need comedians to make public engagement exciting. I mean, you and I were just, Stephen, at the conference for the National Coalition on Dialogue and Deliberation.
We're excited, yes. Ben and I. Ben,
well,
and
it's not just us. I mean, you know from the kind of work that people in public engagement do, whether it's the America Speaks, you know, gatherings around that they've done on a range of issues, most recently on the budget, or, you know, in my experience, gathering people for discussions on the phone about money and politics and corporate personhood. People, when you create a forum for people to have discussions about stuff that they really care about, it's very exciting and engaging for them, you know, and that's what's important. Whether there's an audience that watches it, whether it's entertainment, you know, Stewart's doing entertainment. He's trying to reach beyond that a little bit because I think he's passionate about what he sees and not liking a lot of what he sees. But I think we've become so disengaged, and I want to go back to what Shane said earlier about, you know, how he thinks it's a good thing that people are passionate and worked up about politics, and I would agree with him. I don't agree with a lot of the particular policy positions that I see coming from the Tea Party, but I don't think the fact that people are becoming engaged is a bad thing at all. I think it's an incredible opportunity for us, but we've got to get past the division, and I think that's what Stewart is addressing, and that's where sometimes the Tea Party, for me, does seem to be a problem, because there's an us versus them kind of a thing. You know, I see signs that say "throw the bums out," as if every single person in government is bad, or government itself is automatically bad when we're government. You know, and so the message that we're all Americans, and if we come together, you know, to try to find the opportunities that exist for us, that's a thrilling and exciting prospect. It empowers us all, and what we really suffer from in this country is a feeling of disengagement and disempowerment and resignation. And so, you know, I don't think entertainment is what we need. I think we need, you know, to discover that we can get engaged and we can really make good things happen for all Americans if we do.
I don't. I agree with Ben.
And
I think a few days out from the midterm election, you're going to have craziness out there. There's no doubt. This is a tough time to be talking about everybody just cooling off and moderating. I mean, we're peaking, right? This is a fever swamp if there ever was one right now. But we have to resist the urge to caricature those that we disagree with. And that goes for both sides of the issue. The Tea Party is a response to a government that has grown wildly and is out of touch with many of its citizens. The Tea Party is a reaction. It isn't something that is thoughtless or a bunch of people, a cabal of people coming together because they want what they want. It's a reaction here, and it's been growing for a long time. I heard a poll a few weeks ago that the trust in government right now is in the 20s. I think it was like 21% of people trust their government to be able to resolve issues, important issues. People have lost trust in the government. And I don't think it's their fault. And you're hearing them a lot right now. You hear a lot of people saying, oh, well, you know, these people, these Tea Partiers or these voters or these independents right now that are swinging from one side of the spectrum to the other, they're just angry. They're not thinking clearly. You know, they're anti-this or they're racist or they're sexist or they're homophobic or whatever it is as we throw these labels around about it. These people are getting engaged in issues because it's affecting their lives. I work construction. I'm in the construction industry here in California. Construction industry nationally is one of the hardest hit sectors of the economy. We're really suffering here. And when we look at our leaders and we hear them or we, you know, interpret their stands on issues or what they're doing or what they find is important or what they think a priority is, and we find them out of touch with what's going on in our lives and what they can do, and realize that much of what's going on is a creation of the system that's happened, there has to be a pushback. I would argue that the American personality naturally is one that is skeptical towards government, towards power, towards authority. That's how we were born. That's where we come from here. This is not Europe. Our relationship, the citizens' relationship to government, has always been one, I think, that's had tension in it. And I don't think that what's happening right now is something that's particularly shocking. Maybe the groundswell, the spread of the dissatisfaction is pretty unnerving, pretty shocking, certainly. But Americans that run a pretty wide gamut of the political spectrum are angry at their government because their government doesn't trust them. It doesn't respect them. It doesn't trust them.
Well, it doesn't represent them. You know, the people's voice has been effectively marginalized. So
sure.
I think we come together on that. And of course, everybody's angry. Look at the economic crisis, the worst since the Great Depression. You know, the key to me is that, you know, anger is fine. It's appropriate. But what do we do with that anger? And it's so tempting to just go into straight out rebellion. But rebellion doesn't solve our problems, you know.
Right.
I
think the part of the problem is that when people see, because television and what goes for the visual, and they cover a tea party or a coffee party or wherever, if before it ever gets on television, they want to go for the visual, so they always go for the crazy costumes. You know, so I mean, 99% of the people could be, you know, just ordinary people going to a tea party, for instance, and talking in a civil way. But are they going to get on television? No, it's going to be the person jumping up and down with a crazy costume, and then people see that on television, and they go, "Oh, well, that must be indicative of who was at the tea party today." And so it distorts the media or the mainstream media, but any media can do this. It distorts it, you know, and presents it because then they'll tell you, well, why'd you put that one on? And they go, well, people don't want to see a grandmother standing quietly holding a flag. They want to see the guy dressed up as a bear jumping around. So in that sense, the large part of the dilemma or the problem is that we as people want to be entertained. We want the drama. And so when they point to the people who, when they were at the rally today, Shane, I don't know if you showed, they had a vignette or a video montage of different talk show hosts being like jumping up and down. And they use right and left and so forth and so on. But I mean, the idea is like the only reason that people, that those guys have shows, women too, is because people watch them. And then people want drama. And if you look at most of the non-political shows on television, for instance, it's all about drama. The reality shows are all about people acting, you know, getting them to have these wild reactions under artificial circumstances, you know. But it's the people's reactions that are the real part of it. But they're all an artificial type of thing. So in a sense, we have to deny ourselves, you know, we have to recognize this need in ourselves for the drama. And the entertainment and, you know, the rubbernecking, you know, the same thing when we go by the accident. Say, oh, I'm not going to, all these people are slowing down traffic. I'm going, ooh, look at the crash. You know, we can't stop looking at it. But But if we recognize, the first thing to solving a problem is recognizing that you have it. And if we recognize that there's this need in all of us, and none of us can say, oh, I never look at the accident when I drive by. Yeah, right. That there's this human tendency on our parts to go for the drama, then maybe we can
I think it's deeper than that, though. I mean, Stuart highlights that, but I think there's another layer.
Well, I mean, if and he's been able to do it without the drama part, but he instead has the chuckle and the satire. So that draws it in. So what I'm saying is maybe if we take out the caffeine and add some sugar,
we got to take out the fear too.
Substitute a little bit here. We could have it take advantage of this and come up with a formula that won't be attack things. Can still point at make fun of others and sometimes ourselves at the same time, our human foibles, and get people to think. And so I'm just wondering if there isn't some mashup of things that might actually go further, be able to engage people. And a lot of times it's coffee and donuts. If you want to get people to come to a meeting sometimes, come to your condo association meeting or whatever, you tell them there's coffee and donuts or open bar or whatever it is. You want people to show up at your wedding? Tell them it's
or that they have a chance to make a difference. I think that's, then they'll stop watching incendiary TV and they'll get going in their communities and really make positive change happen. And, the other part of the rally was was about letting go of fear. I mean, sarcastically, of course, with Colbert rallying around fear. But I think that's at the core of why we're having so much trouble as a society, too. That if we're stuck in fear, we kind of get into a spiral, as Francis Moore LePay says, of powerlessness and a concentration of power in the hands of a few. But if we realize that we have incredible abundance and possibility, and we come together in that spirit, then a whole other set of things can happen. And so that I tie the fear to the rebellion, and that's what scares me, frankly, about what I see portrayed from the Tea Party side. This, say the government is always bad, as opposed to the government is us, and we can make it work better if we take the power in government out of a small set of concentrated, powerful hands and bring it back to the people. We need government. Markets don't work if government doesn't, regulate them well. We saw that with the housing crisis, for example. So to me, it all comes down to this idea of fear, and that breeds lack of trust, and that means government becomes the enemy instead of something we try to make better. We come together collectively and say, we are the government. Let's make it work. Let's make it, do the things that we need it to do, because we don't want to live in anarchy.
Okay, let me answer that real quickly, because I think Ben...
Go ahead, Shane, if you want to...
just quickly, because I think Ben brings up a good point, and it shows how him and I are really on opposite sides of the same issue here. And we could talk about that very civilly, but he's afraid of the fear and the movement. And when we speak in categoricals, where we say, tea parties are against all government, or, people on the right want an unregulated market. I mean, no one's saying that. I've never heard that anyway. I mean, libertarians bring that up a lot. Anarchists kind of bring that up. But that's not who is opposing the left. I mean, not even Republicans believe that, But you're going to have, there's going to be a ramp up in the battle that we're in right now, because I'm telling you, there's a growing movement, and it's becoming more mainstream, that government has gotten too big, too impersonal, too much power. It's using environmental policy and market regulation. It's using many vehicles in order to get into our lives and regulate our lives so that we all make sure we do the right thing and what's responsible and such. There's a move in America to devolve power from the government, devolving it down through the federal to the state to the local level. That's a painful process. And those people on the left and those who support an activist government, it's going to be painful for them to see that. And their reaction to that is going to be, pretty much what we're used to right now, which is if you don't support the federal government's programs and its aggressiveness in dealing with some of these issues, well, then you're a racist or you're a bigot of some sort, or you're a hater, you support the rich, you get marginalized and ostracized by the very people who say we need to be more open-minded, we need to be more civilized about these certain issues, but they're passionate issues. They're passionate issues, and so how each side reacts to the other side's arguments kind of frames the debate that we're in, which is why it's easy for it to spiral out of control. And whether Stewart or Colbert today, you know, can put a velvet glove on what are really profound ideological differences in there, well, that's nice. I mean, it may sound nice, but ultimately at some point it's got to come down to brass tacks. And this movement in America, the Tea Party movement, which I would insist is continuing to grow, is a movement that's going to insist, and it's going to send people into government who are going to try to push power away from the federal government, try to devolve that, try to make the government smaller and give more responsibility to individual Americans to make decisions in their private lives. And that's a painful process. It was a painful process for those who disagree with that as it grew, and it's a painful process as it devolves now. So we are in, whatever you want, we're in for another 2, 4, 5, 10 more years of this national conversation here of some pretty pronounced. I mean, look at Paul Krugman's article that he has out right now. It's a pretty succinct view of what he has seen, what this means, what this movement means. And so maybe it starts with you and me, us three, Steve, Ben, and I, about how we discuss and debate these issues. We can have profound differences on how we resolve the issues that we have. But ultimately, this is a political movement. I think it continues here, and it's going to be a passionate, hard-fought debate with real consequential change for one side or the other.
Well, Shane, let me do you have... Here's something. You don't know me, but I used to work. I grew up in a rural, small rural town. My father's a landscaper. My mother's a physical therapist. After college, I went. I got a degree in engineering, and then I ended up couldn't get a job up in Massachusetts. So I went to D.C. for 25 years, and I worked for the federal government for several different agencies. And now I'm back up here on Cape Cod where I live, and I do a variety of things, but it's like, I do home care and, landscaping with my father, who's 84 and he's still working part-time. But anyway, so I've been in a number of different places, so I have a different number of different perspectives. Haven't done construction, but I've done house painting. So, I've kind of got that thing. But I was wondering about your perspective, because here, if I was always frustrated as a bureaucrat, because if we had a proposal for, like, building a bridge, or, if there was something where we were trying to get public input on a government proposal, it was the hardest thing. And because I'm in my 50s, there was a time when nobody had the internet, and we were always trying to figure out how to let people know about a proposal that we'd been working on, because we didn't want to do the wrong thing and put the bridge in the wrong place and so forth. And so we certainly want people, the hardest part was getting people to find out about it, and then along comes the internet. But of course now, even though everybody's on the internet, it's still hard to get the word out. But I guess is that, to me, it's frustrating because people, a large part of how government executes stuff is that, the Congress is kind of like the architect, but it's really, if you're in construction, you're the person who's putting the sticks up, right? And you're trying to follow a plan, and you go, sometimes you go, oh, can't do that, or there's something, and you have to go back and do it a different way, and you go back to the owner, and you say, hey, there's a rock here, or there's something here, we have to make a change, or what do you want? You can do this, or you can do that, or something else, or a combination. It's like, but you're the owner, so, I'm not going to build something and have you come back later and tell me it was the wrong thing, because then I'll have to take it apart and do it the right way. So you're always wanting to make sure you do things the right way and that everybody's on board and so forth and so on. And I guess we're frustrated. People who are inside as bureaucrats, many times, but not often, we're trying to get people to find out about stuff. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that how do we engage the public? And that's what open government is more about. If you look at some of those links at U.S. Transparency, you'll get a little background. So the dilemma is, gee whiz, you know, there's the internet. Everybody's on the internet now. So how do we get the word out to the people that there are things that are going on, and at least some bureaucrats are trying to find new and different ways to, and using new technology, but to engage people who maybe only pay attention every 2 years at, you know, election time, when they look up and they go, me no likey, you're fired. You know, so, I mean, it's kind of like you're the whole person who you're building the house for only comes by every month or two, or you don't only get to see them every once in a while. In the meantime, you're like trying to build a house and you're going, wait a minute, I need input on what to do about this one aspect. You know, these cabinets won't fit or whatever. And you look and you can't get you're leaving messages for the owner and he won't pick up. He won't get back to you. So that's kind of I'm trying to put it in terms you understand it, of the idea that there are people on the inside of government who want to reach out. So it's kind of like, what needs to happen in order for not everybody, but more people to get involved? And maybe it involves coffee and donuts. Maybe it calls it maybe open bar. I don't know. But
well,
the idea that, and so we're looking at Ben Voss and I and others, and it sounds like, and I think that the Tea Party, because of the frustration, is just a natural place for people who do want to say, hey, I'm frustrated with how things are going, and maybe it won't change the whole government, but perhaps it takes baby steps to, you know, on little things like where the local overpass is going to be built or how wide it should be, and people can say, oh, well, if we can do it for that, then we can do it for bigger things. And so I'm wondering, other people, for instance, in your local area who are involved in the Tea Party who would be interested in joining conversations, and they'll probably have to be online or even on Open Government Radio to talk about, you know, hey, how can we take, here's our overlap between the Tea Party and this and this and this. Everybody agrees that we need to be better problem solvers and better collaborators. I don't see anybody who says we need to be worse problem solvers or worse collaborators, or there needs to be less transparency in government. That seems to be the common area. So it's like, how can we work on those areas together and not get hung up with the parts that are that we don't have in common? But
I don't think that you're going to meet people who are going to disagree with you on that. But the crowds that are showing up at Tea Party events, it's a good snapshot of America, in that people have busy lives. There's a lot going on. They don't want government meddling in their lives. And if it's something important that has to do with their community, they make time. I make time. I know. I go to PTA meetings. I go to city council meetings and do things when it affects me, you know, in my issue. But I got a very busy life, you know, and between family and work and my outside interests, I'd like to be informed about what my government is doing. If the government makes that information available to me, that's very important. Very often, that's difficult to get. We don't have a transparent government. We don't know what's going on. And when the government does give us information, often you've got to speak a language or understand a language which you don't know. And so, and that issue, that's a problem. And I think that one of the reasons, too, another one of these things, we talked about the spark of why we are in the political turbulence that we're in right now, too. You know, a good example is the Congress right now, led by Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, which did things, and they don't get credit for a lot of other things that they've done because people are focusing on a few issues that they are angry about those things. But so many people that I talk to about politics right now and why they're voting and what they're upset about, and they'll bring up something like Obamacare, and they'll say, well, you know, I know that there's things in there that are things that I support and that I like, but it was a process, Shane. It was a process of how they rammed it through. So many people are hung up on how Congress did what it did that very often what it did, the bill that it passed, kind of gets lost in the shuffle. People are angry about the door shut and not allowing competing voices in there, and maybe the bickering in Washington between the parties and such. It's the process that poisoned so many people against, you know, against this Congress, in particular, but generally about government in general. A lot of people have finally grown disgusted because they feel, as we talked about earlier, that their government doesn't respect them, doesn't trust them, number one. But number two, that the government itself is its own leviathan, is its own kind of beast that kind of does what it wants to do, regardless of what you may think about a certain issue. And when it does things as consequential, let's say, as Obamacare, which is transformational, which wouldn't be a shock to anybody. That's what our president warned everybody about when he came in, that he was going to aim to make some big changes. That was a really big change. And in that situation, the respectful thing would have been to do, listen, we're going to make some huge changes to health care in America, and we're going to have to get everybody's input on something like this. This is not passing tax bill or some budget or something. This is something huge. We need you involved in it. And people would get involved, Steve. They would. If it involves them, if it affects their lives, they will get involved. But the bureaucrat has become the staid apparatchik for something that they don't understand and they don't trust. And for that bureaucrat to put out his hand and say, "Hi, you know, I'm a government. I'm here to help you." Right now, you're going to get a cold look right now. And I think, as I said earlier, America's natural tendency is to be skeptical of government. Federal government, big government, has not done itself any favors recently by the way that it's acted toward its people, which is what sparked this rebellion that's going on here, which is just the beginning. I think unless our government starts turning around and starts dealing with its citizens in an upright manner, a transparent manner. And I don't see that happening either. I'm not optimistic about that.
Well, and I suspect Ben may have a thought on this, but that just confirmed the perspective that you just gave, Shane, is the same one that I've been telling people, and that other people like myself who have been involved in the open government effort, is that here on what we were disappointed in Obama as well, and that was the best and at worst example of the worst type of behavior, because on one hand, on his first full day in office, he issued a memorandum directing federal agencies to engage with citizens more and better and, more, so forth and so on, and there's a link at U.S. Transparency about that. But then a few months later, here, the White House was, and with people in Congress, but the White House, they're all trying to figure out how to push through healthcare reform, and it got to the point where, as you may remember, the summer, not this past summer, but summer of 2009, they were trying to push it through before the members of Congress went home for recess, summer recess. We have to push it through before they go home and talk to the people. What? Shouldn't you have something on the table and then say, take this back to the people and see what they think about it?
Sure,
it turned out that's what they ended up doing, but the people were watching this on TV the whole time, the idea that this was trying to get, they were trying to, cram it, shove it out the window, and then the people came into the room and said, "Hey, what are you doing with that?" So that was the hypocrisy. So in the sense, we were told during the election that by Obama that, "I'm going to take you along with me to Washington, and we are going to do this, and we are going to change Washington, and, it's going to happen, things are going to happen after the election, so don't leave me, we're going we stuff." And then it turns around that it's like we're standing around at the bus stop going, "Hey, where's the bus that was supposed to pick me up here?" And it just drove right by. And so to me, that, you know, it's I'm very disappointed in the idea that all this talk of public engagement on paper that and what we've been involved in, and at the same time, but, you know, leadership, you know, do as I say, not as I do. It's just a very powerful disincentive to follow anybody. So when Obama shows up and says, hey, you got to vote for me again, it's like, yeah, but you said you were going to pick me up, and you didn't. So why should I, you know, it's just...
I'll jump in with a comment if you want, but and then I'm going to have to leave you. But I do have a few thoughts on that whole dynamic.
Okay, and I appreciate you both, you gentlemen, for calling in and sharing this. I was afraid I would be talking with my hand puppet here for a little while, but I want to talk with you a little bit more offline, so I'll contact you. I have you don't mind me giving you a call later just to get some other information. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. I won't say but go ahead, Ben, and then we can wrap up, because I'm sure we could just go on, and it's very entertaining and so forth. But we all have chili to make and other things to do, and to tell our friends to watch the show, which Shane, they had Cat Stevens and Ozzy Osbourne and the OJs, and so it was cool. I was like, you know, I would definitely watch. My non-political friends would enjoy watching it too. So I encourage you to go back and take a look at least the funny parts, and you can fast forward it or whatever if you TiVo it or that. But in any event, go ahead, Ben, and if there's any closing thoughts, we can wrap this up. Shane, with you, you know, and so forth, and we can go on and finish up the program. But I appreciate both of you being on. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah. So, well, I wanted to just pick up on the last thread there, and the town halls, and this whole question of healthcare. I think that you could look at that as, you know, kind of an object lesson in why we're having so much trouble on a lot of levels, and where there's tremendous opportunity, you know, if we thought about it differently. I would say that first the notion that a handful of leaders are going to take care of everything for us is part of what gets us into trouble, and so we're so disappointed with Obama when that doesn't happen. And I think that's a big part of our problem, that we think our obligation as citizens ends when we vote. And so that goes back to, you know, this incredible opportunity we have with people getting engaged that Shane was also commenting on. And the town hall energy was an opportunity to do that. But unfortunately, the format that was chosen is not a format that creates real meaningful exchange of ideas, you know. So the idea that you have people one by one come and stand at a microphone and ask questions, let alone that they start, you know, shouting things out. But even if that wasn't going on, and I don't know that it went on everywhere, it did it. One, you know, let's not even get caught up in that. But there are so many productive ways to get groups of people, even people that disagree radically with one another, to start talking constructively about what could be done. Because I think we could all probably agree that our healthcare system is massively dysfunctional, you know. So we had a common starting point there. And instead of taking this open government idea and really moving it to, you know, the ultimate constructive opportunity that it could be, it devolved into, well, let's publish a lot of data, and, you know, that's, you know, and maybe we'll have some town halls. I think that wasn't really strictly open government, but that was what happened. So I just think we are so much better than that as a people. And if we sit down at a table together and try to look for the opportunities to make things better, there's just enormous number of good things that can happen. And so the energy we have now is an opportunity for that. But we've got to take the anger and the frustration and the rebellion and move that into a constructive, you know, positive perspective that says, you know, we can't just keep doing what we're doing. We can't keep fighting with one another either. If you think this is a war between, you know, two sides, you know, a house divided against itself cannot stand, as Abraham Lincoln said. And so that, to me, is where we need to focus our thoughts. Not that we let go of the anger or the frustration, you know, or the passion, but that we find ways to hold that and come together to use it constructively. And I really think we have that ability. And we also have people that are really skilled at doing this. I mean, you and I were hanging out with some of them yesterday at the NCDD conference, and it's almost like a hidden secret, you know, and it's part of this whole idea of how we rethink government. So it's not that we just elect people and they go and solve all our problems for us. It's that we find ways to really empower a living democracy, again, as Francis Moore LePay would say, that all Americans can feel engaged and empowered in. And then we start trusting each other again, and we start coming up with creative solutions that don't fit on the left and right spectrum. They're just new ideas. You know, I mean, I don't think we have a clue what's possible. We have so much capability, so much potential. We haven't even tried to see what we could really do if we stop fighting and yelling at one another. So that's my soapbox speech, and I'll leave it at that. Thanks,
yeah,
thanks for letting me be here.
I appreciate you. We'll, yeah. No,
thanks, Ben.
I
nice to meet you, Ben.
The energy needs
you too, Shane.
So, and I'll follow up with Shane, but it sounds like there's a good connection here. I just want him to make it.
Yeah.
Make him maybe
yeah, I'll
a
just
little
say
more
real
aware
quickly
of,
too. I'll just say real quickly to wrap it up here too, as we get ready to carve pumpkins over here. Is that I've been to a bunch of town halls as well out here. John Campbell's my representative. I've been over into Santa Ana and been to Loretta Sanchez's meetings over there. And, you know, again, talking about caricature, there are a bunch of town halls where you had a bunch of angry people. But that's because you're dealing with a very sensitive topic, people's health care. And you're bound to get that. And one of the reasons why people want to a minority of these town hall meetings spun out of control is because their representatives could not answer questions. And people get nervous. People get very nervous when big changes like this are being proposed and no one's read the bill and no one knows what's going to happen and what's going on. You're dealing with something as personal as health care about that. And, you know, people got upset about that. But when we talk about democracy here, on the local level over here, I mean, we have meetings every month out here with different political representatives, from our city council here to our state representatives, our county representatives, like that. And they're great. I love going to them when I can. There's nothing wrong with them. There's a lot of ideas, and the questions that are asked are usually reflective of the questions that a lot of people have up there. And so And so I like that kind of government. I like government where people are getting together in a giant room and there's 200 people. We're asking questions and we're having a conversation with our representative or our senator who has a whole lot of power. Whether that senator does what we want or not, well, you know, we settled that on November 2nd. But there's a big grand conversation going on right now. And it's not a bunch of people sitting at a table looking at each other. It's often in these rooms, and it may be a loud conversation, and it's passionate, but it happens every week, and you never hear about those. But you get a few here, town halls, where people are angry, and they're yelling at the representative who doesn't have a good answer, and all of a sudden now it's the people at the town hall's fault. All of a sudden now, there's a bunch of angry people who are shutting down the conversation, and all of a sudden it gets turned back again onto the citizen about that. We've created the environment we're in right now. We've done that. We're responsible for that, and that it begins with the foundation of how we treat people, with what we disagree with and how we talk to them, Steve. And the only way that changes is if we begin to respect our adversaries, our political, our ideological adversaries. When we start to respect them, we don't have to like their arguments, but if we become to respect them and understand that their arguments against things are not because of some character defect, but because of some real valid concerns that they have, hey, things are going to get better from there. And the country grows for that, and that's a good thing. We need that. We don't need a bunch of elites or subcommittees of people deciding for the rest of us how we do it, because they can do it in a civil way. Let's have the grand conversation, and let's not be afraid of the passion that's involved in that. So I appreciate you letting me talk, Steve, on your show. You're a big part of changing the direction of the conversation, and so I appreciate that. And it was good to hear from Ben as well. So have a good Halloween, a safe Halloween.
Okay.
And I'll look for you again
okay.
on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, man.
Okay, Shane. Thanks very much for calling in. And I'm just going to wrap up by saying that I think what Chainwich is talking about is basically the idea that the relationship is evolving. The people are probably a large extent because of the internet are becoming more informed, and maybe like teenagers want to be respectful, the parents don't think of them as little kids anymore, and they want to sit at the big table. And so the relationship is evolving, and that's painful if anybody's ever had teenagers. For both sides. And so the idea of respect, in that regard, it's we need to find our way to a new type of respectful discussion and relationship. So in any event, we'll wrap up for now, and I encourage anyone who didn't see the rally today to go look at rallytorestoresanity.com, and I think this is something that this topic is something that we'll be touching on again, and next time we'll be more prepared as far as some links and some guests and putting out the word earlier and so forth and so on. But I'm glad we had the show today, and I'm glad Ben Voss and Shane called in to talk about it, and we'll come again next week. So Steve Buckley for Open Government Radio. The website for today's show is www.ustransparency.com. And that today's show is October 30th, 2010. And that is posted on... look for the archive show on U.S. Transparency. That would be October 29th. Thank you very much. And there's a way to sign up for our email list at ustransparency.com, you'll see a box that says enter your email address, and you will get a notice whenever a new show is scheduled. Thank you very much. Talk to you later. Bye.